Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. All right, it's time for the We Have Communicators podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here to talk about the iPhone, iPod Touch, iOS 4, App Store, all that fun stuff. And with me here, we're welcoming Adam back. Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Where were you guys?
Oh, we were on vacation.
Oh.
Yeah, cool. It's
I kept showing up and no one was there. I don't know what was going on.
Yeah.
Now I'm back from vacation, yeah.
Yep.
Good to be back.
Great to have you. And Jeff Gamet's here from the Mac Observer.
As always, great to be back. And I missed you while you're gone, Adam.
Oh.
Yeah, we missed
so
you.
So kind.
Yep. Okay, we're going to move right into it. But before we do that, we have the phone number. If you want to call in, questions, comments, pointing out things that we said incorrectly, 202-642-6667. If you can't think of anything to call about right now, just that's okay. Plug it in your iPhone, put it in the address book as We Have Communicators, 202-642-6667. And with that, moving right along to the iPhone 4 pre-sales. So it's been confirmed.
Or non-pre-sales.
Or the non-pre-sales.
As it may be.
Yeah. So starting off, Radio Shack, Best Buy, and Walmart have all, in addition to AT&T and Apple stores, have confirmed to be... I don't know if Best Buy... Did Best Buy confirm? Or was that just a rumor?
I saw an order receipt from somebody who had paid their $50.
Yeah, Best Buy was definitely doing the pre-order reservation thing. $50 deposit. You pay the difference when you pick your iPhone up on the 24th.
Gotcha.
I was getting Twitter reports that both the AT&T stores and... Just before that we went on the air with this podcast, I was getting some Twitter reports unconfirmed that both AT&T and Radio Shack are sold out of pre-orders.
Okay,
I've been hearing that too, but I haven't
heard
been able
well.
To confirm it yet.
Fully unconfirmed.
Engadget actually received a statement from AT&T saying that, yes, they have been... Let me see here. Because of incredible interest in iPhone 4, today was the busiest online sales day in AT&T history. As of Tuesday afternoon, customers who pre-order iPhone 4 moving forward will receive their device on June 25th or later, depending on when it was when the order was placed.
See, this is not good. Somebody sent me their AT&T confirmation email too, and it was very vague on whether or not they were guaranteeing if you get your iPhone. So when I was having my ordering
troubles,
everybody
was... I don't think they're guaranteeing any deliveries.
Exactly.
Just through AT&T.
Yeah, so everybody kept going, well, use AT&T. And I was just going, I don't trust them to actually deliver it on the 24th.
Right, yeah. Are they allowing you to reserve them for in-store pickup, or is it just delivery or both?
I think they were doing both.
Okay.
From what I heard.
They say that they're going to email customers with confirmation once their order is placed, and again when it ships. In addition, they'll have the devices as a first come first serve deal on the 24th.
Yeah, I want to take issue with people.
Yeah, right.
I want to take issue with the statement that it was the busiest online sales day, because I don't know for a fact that there was any sales going on. There was just a lot of I'm not getting in and I can't make a sale.
Okay, that's a good point. Now, based on what I've been seeing on Twitter all day, I'm assuming that there's probably about 15, maybe 20 iPhones across the United States that were actually pre-order sold today. And
yeah,
that there's a group of people like me that were able to place a reservation, and then everyone else is still stuck at screens that they just can't get past because servers are failing.
That's where
yeah,
I was at.
Yeah.
I mean, I ended up in the same boat as you, Jeff. I had to use the new Apple Store app, and all I got is a reservation for pickup, but I didn't enter a credit card. I didn't give any money. I didn't do any kind of payment at all. So I don't consider that necessarily a sale. That's just
no, that's
me saying,
not a sale.
I want one.
Yeah. So what it seems like that AT&T is mainly the issue on both AT&T's site and Apple's site. As when you go to Apple's site and you enter in your phone number and your social security and all that, it then talks to AT&T servers, and just earlier in the day, it was just spinning and spinning and spinning and didn't really resolve to anything.
Yeah, I think that's still happening for most people.
Well, when I went to reserve my iPhone 4 just before we started this program, it seemed to do the whole AT&T thing where I put in all that information and it spun there for a minute. And then it told me that I had reserved an iPhone 4 for the 32 gig for $700. And so I'm assuming that that's a... just simply because Apple decided to drop trying to get information from AT&T as far as eligibility and just told me, this is the worst amount that you will have to pay if you don't qualify.
Right. That's the no contract price. And I got exactly the same thing. So my reservation went through, even though the app asked me to confirm all of my information and was supposedly looking up my eligibility, and it successfully went through. I made the reservation I think even in the app it gave the right pricing on my confirmation, but when I got my email it was the $699 price for the 32 gigabyte black model.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that when I go in to pick it up at the Apple store on the 24th, they just look at my contract info there and then give me the correct pricing.
I'm sure that'll be the case. Now, is it they're reserving the entire day for the iPhone?
Yes.
Or so do you have to come in by 3 or is it by
you
close?
Come in by store closing.
Okay.
The way they have it worded, from 7 a.m. all day. So that's going to be from when they open the doors at 7 a.m. all the way through to when they close the doors crying and hoping that they don't have to open again the next day.
Yeah, right. You know, I put out a Twitter earlier today. I said, you know, this really probably is just a big old warm-up to how much AT&T is going to fail on activations on the 24th. So,
you know, I'm concerned. You're right.
I'm going to have a phone, but it's not going to be able to do anything, like make a phone call, because it won't be activated. It'll just be stuck on that please activate screen all day.
Yeah.
You know, I had that problem when I got my 3G, and I got my 3G, I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks after the launch, because that was the earliest I could get one. And it was whatever day they actually first started doing the thing where they would hand you the card in line so that you knew that while you're in line, you had a reservation. So like 3 weeks out and they still had lines at the stores. It was crazy. But, yeah, so I went in, they did the whole transfer process, and then I had 2 iPhone bricks in my hand for the better part of probably about 3 or 4 hours. It was crazy. Yeah.
Why now? I guess we'll never know the answer to this, but why can't they get a handle on this? Every iPhone launch, there seems to be something like this happening.
Well, I think they I'm thinking we may not see as big an issue as we saw with the 3G launch with AT&T.
I think you're stoned.
Okay. That's arguable.
It's already way just as bad.
Well, with the pre-orders, you have to realize that they're pulling information from a different source when they're checking eligibility and that sort of thing. And so if they're checking eligibility and they have this new information as far as everybody who purchased an iPhone or who has a contract that's ending in 2010 gets this new iPhone, I'm guessing that has contributed to the backup, although it seems like it may just simply be that there's an insane number of people trying to pre-order this thing. I think in Japan, there are people lining up around Apple stores and not AT&T stores, but
SoftBank.
And there have been other reports of customers lining up outside AT&T stores in the States to get pre-orders. And a lot of those stores have even started writing those pre-orders just down on pieces of paper.
Yeah, Ted Landau, he writes for TMO some, and a lot. And this morning when we were doing a meeting, he said, yeah, when we're done with our meeting, I'm just going to the AT&T store. He had already given up on trying the online thing. Mm-hmm. And so he got in his car and drove to an AT&T store and did his pre-order there.
Wow. Now, they're accepting the pre-orders at AT&T stores? Or they were
apparently,
anyway?
Because that, yeah, that's what Ted did.
Huh. Okay. Well, yeah, now they're not accepting pre-orders for the 24th anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So Ted made the deadline, and everyone after him, sorry, suckas.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you put much stock in, I guess, Gizmodo is kind of reporting that this may be related to some of the AT&T having to reboot their account servers and not having time to test it because of the other situation that went on this last week with the hacking?
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that.
That there's a correlation.
I find it very easy to believe that AT&T assumes that the systems they have in place, because they're good enough most of the time, ought to be good enough all of the time, and they don't see it as a valuable investment to upgrade their equipment to handle these heavy types of product launches.
See, I don't know if I buy that. I mean, do you really think that the demand for this phone is any higher than any of the other, the 3G, the 3GS?
I'd say it's higher than the 3GS, at the very least.
It doesn't matter if it's higher or not. It just matters that it's higher than what AT&T typically has to deal with for other product launches.
Yeah.
The iPhone breaks all the rules, and it breaks the servers. And I think that AT&T just simply has chosen not to make sure that they have the server infrastructure in place to handle something like this. And where they could be going out and just buying extra processor cycles somewhere else to to handle a day like this, they're not even doing that. They can't be, considering how horribly the servers are performing.
So why is Apple putting up with this with every product launch, and why isn't there pressure from Apple? Because ultimately, doesn't it look bad for Apple? I mean, the stories we're going to hear after this, especially in the mainstream media, is that Apple's iPhone sales launch went horribly.
Yeah, and that Apple failed to adequately prepare for the launch, and so no one could get through the website. And yeah, that's exactly what I expect we'll be seeing. When in fact, I think the problem lies mostly in AT&T's camp. And
I did get some sporadic issues with Apple's website, but almost exclusively every time I put it in, and I tried for about 5-6 hours, like just straight, and maybe that wasn't helping the situation. But almost every time I had the same experience that you mentioned earlier, Michael, where it was I could get through Apple screens and forms, and it was when it was trying to check, anytime it was trying to check what would be account data that would be on AT&T servers, it seemed to time out or fail. Now, I can't say definitively that that's AT&T's problem, but it's certainly the anecdotal, how do you say that? Yeah, the hearsay evidence. I was going to say that word.
Circumstantial evidence.
Circumstantial evidence seems to point to an AT&T issue.
Yeah, I asked AT&T this morning if their servers were having trouble because of the demand, and they declined to comment.
Yeah, of course they did.
Yeah, of course they did. But,
so, So what's the deal with them not? They're them only selling the black iPhone 4 right now. According to, I guess, everywhere, it was a rumor yesterday, and now today it's confirmed that they're only selling black iPhone 4s. The iPhone 4 that is white, the white iPhone 4, is not being pre-sold and doesn't seem like it's going to be available on the day of launch either.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Weird.
I have my Jedi instincts are telling me that something is wrong.
Yeah.
And Apple knows it. And so instead of letting the white model go out, they're holding it for now. And And it wouldn't surprise me if they knew this a week or two ago, and as soon as they realized, crap, we have a problem with the whites, whatever that might be, they stopped the production of that, and then took the time that you would need to make white ones and put it into black ones so they could have even more black ones for launch day.
That sounds reasonable.
I think they've been stockpiling iPhone 4s at least since WWDC.
Well, sure, there were certainly enough components flying around everywhere.
Yeah, we could have been building our own.
Yeah.
All Gizmodo's help.
Yeah,
I kind of thought the same thing that Jeff was thinking with respect to the white. And the only thing that I can come up with is that, you know, it has that one design detail change for the sensor.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only thing that really seems that different. So I'm wondering if maybe just the visibility or the accuracy of the sensor is somehow diminished to a level where Apple's just really not overall happy with how it's performing.
Yeah,
and maybe they're looking at, do we need to do a design tweak, or can we do a software tweak or something to kind of get that more reliable? If I were going to guess at one thing, because that seems to be the only thing that would be really different other than the color, right?
Yeah, that was the very specific to the white iPhone thing that I was thinking as well, because I've been unhappy with that one bit as well. That's the only thing that's really stopping me from immediately saying, go, I want the white iPhone 4. So, you know, it's again my hope that unicorns exist and that they're going to fix that somehow. That's fueling the speculation that might be the cause.
Yeah,
but I would say more logically,
the proximity sensor doesn't work quite as well. So you hold it to your face and it's not, you know, turning off on the white model because
right. It's
just not getting the transparency that it needs.
Or it could just very well be that they needed the production space to just do the iPhone 4 in black only, because that's the higher selling model, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'd be curious about that. I mean, the other theory would be that, you know, maybe they were hoping to call, like, some people would just hold off and wait and go, oh, I really want the white, I'm not going to order now, and that maybe it would trickle. But I don't really buy that. That's just another wild theory that, you know, if I were to guess, what could possibly be the reason? I think it's more likely a technical issue.
Mm-hmm. So did you hear Radio Shack is actually going to be offering a trade-in program for the iPhone 3GS and apparently other random gadgets, but primarily you'll be able to take your iPhone 3GS, and they didn't specify here, but your iPhone 3GS is worth $200. I'm guessing if you have a 32 gig, it might be worth more, but you at least have a $200 rebate instant in store, as far as I can tell. So if you go to a Radio Shack, you can take your 3GS as long as it's in good condition and trade it in for an iPhone 4.
You know, that's pretty cool, but it's also something you've been able to do at Radio Shack for a little while now with the 3GS.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see what they're going to be doing to make this worthwhile for them, because when people were taking in their older iPhones to get a 3GS, they were getting refurbished 3GS models.
Ah.
And it's going to be kind of hard to get refurbished models. As far as I can tell, there's potentially only one refurbished model out there right now.
I wonder which one that is.
Yeah, I'm on a roll today.
Yeah.
Do they probably have such a thing, though, as like a factory refurbished model, right? Or would that even make sense?
Well, I'm assuming that's what all of them are. That, you know, the ones that Radio Shack has been doling out. Just like if you go into the Genius Bar and they swap out your iPhone, they pull up one of the generic white boxes.
I'm thinking on an iPhone 4, is there certain ones that come off the production line that maybe don't pass QA, that then they kind of Frankenstein together out of, oh, well, this front glass from this one's good and that circuit board from that one's good and let's put this back together. Would they do that kind of thing and then just turn around and sell that as new, or would they sort of stockpile those as refurbs for when people come into a Genius Bar, or see what I'm saying?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Could they have a little stockpile of kind of already refurbished, you know, ones that went through assembly that aren't necessary. I guess I don't. It depends on what the term refurbished or reconditioned is or reused. I mean, can they strip one apart and kind of component test it and then reassemble it? And then do you call that new or do you call that we kind of?
Yeah,
they could do that. Now, I have to point out my laughter, which was completely out of context, really was completely out of context. I just got an email from AT&T that says iPhone 4 pre-order now.
Does that mean their system's up?
At least their email server is.
Hey, Adam, you held the phone up to the microphone before we started, and you, I don't, are you still on hold with Apple? Or were
no,
you just yeah, it was actually at the point where Apple, I'm guessing still at the point where Apple is just not taking calls. Are you calling 800 my Apple or tech support?
Right, yeah. So yeah, when I was doing my order, there was like a number there. It's like, oh, you're having trouble? Call 1-800 my Apple. And I'm like, ah, yeah, I'm going to call that and I'm going to get put on hold. But what I actually heard was this.
Thank you for calling Apple. Due to extremely high call volumes, we are unable to answer your call at this time. We apologize for the inconvenience. Please try your call again later.
We
appreciate your business and look forward to serving you in the future.
Yeah, we've all gone home. Call us later.
Yeah, they're like, no, we're not dealing with this. turn the phones off, and then I forget how to pause my iPod. Yeah, they're like, yeah, let's just turn these off. We won't be taking any phone calls today.
Yeah.
Which is just really weird from a customer. I've never heard a company just completely, you know,
kill the call.
We're not even going to pick up the call.
Yeah. I just got my my email from Apple just now saying you can pick up your reserved iPhone on June 24th at 7 a.m. And if my email would load, I would look at the rest to see if it knows about the pricing differences, but it's not so. We have a lot more to talk about. Starbucks with free Wi-Fi, stolen iPad 3G email address thing, iOS 4 apps, and much more. But before we do that, I have to talk about our wonderful sponsor, Citrix, with GoToAssist Express. You can try it free for 30 days by going to GoToAssist.com/Ally. And if you don't know what GoToAssist Express is... the best way to explain it is that if you've ever gotten a call from somebody saying, hey, you know, how do I do this on my computer? I don't know how to do this in iTunes, or maybe worse, I'm having a problem with my computer. I can't get rid of this virus software or something crazy like that, where it makes a lot more sense and be much quicker to resolve if you were right there instead of having to guide someone through clicking on the right thing and remembering what the... the iTunes advanced settings looks like and all that kind of stuff. So GoToAssist Express allows you to, once you sign up, you get an application that you throw in your applications folder on your Mac or PC, works on both. And you just simply open that application whenever you get a call from somebody, and you give them this special URL and you tell them what the code is, and it's unique to every session that you do. They put it in, and within about 30 seconds to a minute, you can see their screen. You can take control. It works on both Mac and PCs. You can chat between each computer. And if you're both on a Windows computer, you can actually send files back and forth to get patches to and from to make things work. There's also a full system profiler, so you can check out all of the applications and software that's installed. You can also see all the hardware, right down to, you know, what kind of memory is plugged into each slot on the computer. You can see everything that's running, all the running applications and processes as well. So you can see if there's something crazy going on someone's Windows computer that's causing an issue. And there's also 128-bit SSL encryption. So you don't have to worry about if you're typing passwords or, you know, just sharing information. I mean, just seeing the screen alone can be bad. So that's very secure. You don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. And you can do actually 8 sessions at once. So if you are a support person, you can actually help someone maybe start an update on one computer, jump over to another one, do something else, and just get stuff rolling. So it's very cool. I've actually used it and enjoy it very much. You can try it free for 30 days by going to gotoassist.com/Allie, and that supports the We Have Communicators podcast. So check that out to support the show. And with that, moving right along to Starbucks offering free Wi-Fi at all U.S. stores, finally.
I'm smiling. I forgot it's not a video podcast.
Yeah, it's you know, the when I first got my iPad, I think that day I thought, okay, I need to go into a Starbucks and just feel awesome with my iPad because I have an iPad and I have to go to Starbucks because that's what you do with an iPad. And I thought for sure that I got free Wi-Fi on an iPad. For some reason, I thought that. And of course, I go in there and it's not free and you have to get a thing. And it's just so irritating because most of the other places around town don't require you to pay. So this is great for, you know, of course, if you're an iPhone customer, you got this for free. But now it works on your Mac. And it works on your iPad with Wi-Fi, no charge.
And that's starting on July 1st.
Yeah, starting on July 1st. That is correct.
Now, Michael, just so you know, I planned ahead, which you could have done. I went and picked up a Starbucks card a couple weeks ahead of the iPad launch and started racking up charges on it so that I'd have my free Wi-Fi.
Okay. Yeah. So how does that work? You just by having the card, and what does that lay? You have to charge up the card with money first, and then
yeah. So what you do, you get one of the Starbucks cards, and then you put money on it, and you have to register the card at the Starbucks website, and then it keeps track of all your transactions. And once you've done five different purchases with the card, then you get 2 free hours of Wi-Fi a day, but they don't actually track it. So it's, you just get free Wi-Fi every day.
Oh, and, nice.
And then after 15 drinks, they send you a little postcard in the mail for a free drink. And it turns out that I drink at Starbucks so much that right now I actually have 3 free drink cards on my refrigerator door.
Oh, wow. Can you do? Yeah. Will it, do they offer the same deal if you do the iPhone app version of that? I mean, not that it matters anymore. The free drink thing.
Yes, because the iPhone app keeps track of all of your Starbucks cards. So if you're living someplace where you can use the iPhone Starbucks app, will link all the transactions to your cards.
Cool. Yeah, so not that it matters anymore because there's free Wi-Fi starting July 1st.
Did you hear the other part of that?
The free drinks.
Well, no, I mean about the free Wi-Fi thing.
No.
So so Starbucks has a deal where websites where typically you need to have a subscription to look at the content, like Wall Street Journal, while you're in Starbucks, you'll have free access to that.
Ooh. Now that's nice. Yeah.
I thought that was a nice feature.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, and the free song of the day or week thing where you have to go in and get the card and type in the code to get the free song, you won't have to do that anymore. You'll just be able to go in and download the free song from within Starbucks.
On the Starbucks website or on your iPod?
Right to your iPod or iPad.
So it does the iTunes still does the Starbucks thing on your iPhone?
Yeah. Yeah, I end up picking up the card every week and downloading the free track just so I can experience artists that I might not otherwise hear.
Right. I mean, does it do the, you know, what's playing right now in the Starbucks thing? Oh,
no, most Starbucks still don't have that. I don't think there's...
I don't think they have plans to finish rolling that out either.
Yeah, I don't think they ever rolled it out in Colorado anywhere.
Yeah. All right, so do we want to talk about the stolen email address thing? I'll give a quick overview if you haven't already heard about it. So basically, AT&T, I'm not
do
really sure
where to
start.
Do you want me to explain it because you're having trouble?
Yes. Jeff, you can go ahead and explain it.
Right. Okay, so the deal is for people that have an iPad with 3G support, when they would log in to their AT&T account from their iPad, it would look at the SIM identifier code that's attached to the micro SIM, and then automatically fill in the username and email address on the web page for you. So it was a convenient way to save iPad users a little bit of extra typing. So what happened was this group of hackers, they are not a security research firm. Bullshit. They're not a security research firm.
Did they have a code name? Because Fake Steve mentioned a code name, and I'm not sure if he made that up or if it was their real code name.
Well, the organization calls themselves Goatsy Security.
Oh my gosh, it's true.
Their logo is awful.
If you've ever seen the Goatsy photo, what they did was they made like an Illustrator vector drawing version of that. Okay, so there's no way any legitimate security firm would have Goatsy as their logo or their name, yet they do. Uh-huh. But Gawker was more than happy to call them a security research firm because that's how they roll. Anyhow, so the deal is this group wrote a PHP script that would randomly generate microSIM card numbers and then feed them to the website. And every time it hit one, that was actually an iPad 3G user's card. And it was a card that currently had an account set up with AT&T. It would spit out their name and email address. So they just ran the script and managed to get over 114,000 iPad account names and email addresses, and then turned everything over to Gawker because, you know, if you have sensitive information, who better to entrust it with than Gawker? and so then Gawker ran their story, and it turns out that a lot of the names that they culled from AT&T servers were like top government officials and famous people.
And Kara Swisher, who blogged a lot about it too.
Yeah. Yeah, so AT&T has fixed the issue so that you now have to put in your name and an email address instead of letting it autofill for you, which should address the problem and keep it from happening again. But that's in a nutshell, that's what happened. Oh, and now I guess the FBI is looking into it as a possible criminal act.
As an act from Goatsy?
As the hackers, yes.
Yeah.
I think in the official apology from AT&T, they called the hackers quote-unquote hackers and didn't really take that too seriously. But was this a big security flaw? I guess it was on AT&T's part to do something like that. Couldn't they have done something more secure in autofilling this thing? I guess their solution to this was just simply removing the feature from their web page.
Right. Yeah. So they just cut the autofill feature out, and now you have to type in the info. I suppose they could have set something up where it gets the SIM number and then asks the iPad for more account information and then fills it in from the iPad. I'm assuming there's a way to make that happen, but that's not how it worked.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the upside, assuming that you can put a positive spin on having all the data go out and end up in Gawker's hands, would be that with the information that they culled, the likelihood that they can hack into anyone's account or cause other mischief with other people's accounts or personal data is pretty slim because they don't have any passwords.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The worst scenario is that someone uses those email addresses to perpetrate other phishing scams to get additional data.
Right. So yeah. So they'd have to use the data indirectly as opposed to directly to damage people.
Right.
And I did get an email from one of my listeners who said that he had a boss who had received or had gotten a 3G and did see a sudden increase in his spam volume.
Oh wow!
On his iPad, he doesn't know that it's directly connected, but he said timing wise, it was within days of the the breach, and he did get the email from AT&T. Somehow I seem to have avoided it because I did not even get the AT&T email. So I don't know if they only emailed
people.
They didn't
guess your card number.
Yeah.
They didn't guess mine because I didn't get a 3G iPad.
Yeah.
So Apple has started already accepting iOS 4 applications. That happened actually on June 10th. And the store, iOS 4 launches on the 21st. So has anybody messed? Have either of you looked at iOS 4 release candidate?
Not the recent, the brand
new
one.
No, I haven't seen the release candidate yet.
I have a friend who put it on his phone, and it's seems speedier than my 3GS with 3.1.2. Of course, I jailbreak, but it seemed even speedier than just your run-of-the-mill iPhone 3GS. So that's a plus, and it's going to be even faster when we get the iPhone 4.
Nice. I'm up for faster. Tired with slow performance of my 3G.
They're likely at a point now where they can start pulling back some of maybe some of the debug stuff that they have to do.
Oh, yeah.
Typically, so they maybe tone that down a little bit, which would account for a minor speed bump. And probably by the time they release it, it would in theory, be even faster, even on older hardware.
Yeah. The one thing that threw me off, the folders are really nice, but the fact that you can't scroll through a folder and then it just gives you that row of what, 9 or 6?
You get 9.
Yeah.
I think it's 9. Yeah.
And you can't scroll through it. That's just, I really thought they were going to change that.
They will ultimately have to, I think.
It's just, it doesn't feel natural. It feels very natural to be like, oh, okay, page, next. Where is the next page?
Can I ask a dumb question?
It's on the AT&T servers.
Can I ask a dumb question with the existing? Do we get to call the existing OS an iOS? Is it now iOS 3.3?
You know, 3.3 or? I haven't heard official nomenclature yet. I'm referring to it as iOS 4 and iPhone OS 3.1.3.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so iPhone OS 3.1.3. I didn't realize this happened, but when I went to install the new Apple Store application today, I have 11 pages of apps on my iPhone. So I saw it install, I saw it download, and I'm like, where is it? And I spent about 5 minutes trying to find it and then realized it was off in the invisible space.
Yeah. Oh, so you had to do a search for it.
Yeah, I had to do a search for it. And so now, but here's the problem. I've never been in this situation before, and you guys probably know. Now I've deleted, extra applications, and I have space, but it still hasn't sucked itself off the invisible 12th page.
You have to do is plug your iPhone into iTunes and then move things around in iTunes.
Oh, okay. Is that there's no way to do it on the phone.
Or probably just a reboot. Have you tried that?
Yeah, I did a reboot. That didn't work.
Or delete.
Wait a minute. I take it back. It is there.
Okay, good.
That must have come back after the reboot.
I would say otherwise you'd just, you could probably get that to pop back if you deleted more than one. So if you have two spots available and you'd like saved a web clip and then it just kind of said, oh yeah, that one's over there and popped it back.
It was a weird phenomenon. That was the first time I experienced that. I was like, I know I downloaded this. Am I going insane?
Yeah. Yeah, that is a weird thing. Did they increase the page limit on the OS 4? Do we know?
I don't know.
I think they added folders to kind of call that so they wouldn't have to.
I wonder what will happen.
Their solution was, well, you've got folders now. So in essence, you got 9 times 11, right?
Right, yeah. So I wonder what will happen if you do what
more than
you just did. And maybe it'll kind of stuff stuff into folders. Maybe the last two icons, it'll say grouped or extra applications or something.
Because, yeah. And
that is a weird bug.
Each screen you'd have, 12? Mm-hmm. 12 potential folders that could have 9. So it's 9 times 12 per page times 11 pages. That's just like insane.
Yeah.
That's a buttload of apps.
Buttload. Metric buttload. One interesting thing that I saw about the iPhone 4, the display, of course, is just everybody's saying it's awesome. But the one thing that we haven't really talked about is that the upload speed. iLounge has noticed that the upload speed has been increased from, what was it, 386 kilobits per second on the 3GS to a theoretical maximum of 5.76 megabits per second.
Yeah, that's because then they're now supporting the new technology.
HSUPA thing.
Yeah, right. And it's supposedly the carriers have it kind of limited right now at two gigabytes, but that made a lot of sense to me when you think about video.
Yeah, yeah. If you're going to be uploading
your iMovie projects to your Mobile Me Gallery or YouTube, you're going to need some extra upstream bandwidth.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you're going to be tethering.
Oh, yeah, the tethering thing.
Yeah.
Oh, like, I'm assuming you guys already talked about
that. We definitely
that,
did,
that
yeah.
Stupid it's, fiasco.
Yeah, so to bring you up to speed on that, Adam, the general consensus is screw you, AT&T, for charging us $20 for the privilege of burning through our data plan faster. Let's all jailbreak.
Or buy a MiFi.
Yeah, or buy a MiFi.
Yeah.
Although those are capped at about 5, right? Is that right? Do I have that right?
Yes, that sounds about right.
So you're not going to gain a whole lot of extra. And that's inherently the problem with all of this stuff. So yeah, great, you have faster upload speed. Great, I can do a crud more video on my phone. Unless I'm on Wi-Fi, I'm not going to be able to do anything with it, which is partially why I would go back and, again, applaud Starbucks. And I think we are going to have to be seeing a lot more free, ubiquitous Wi-Fi around to support these devices, unfortunately, because the cell networks apparently can't handle it, because everybody seems to be imposing tighter caps and not restricting. And I mentioned this on my show. It's just frustrating to me because it seems like we're going backwards. Typically, technology gets better, more sophisticated, faster, cheaper. But for some reason in the cell industry, we get less. It's slower because it's more saturated and they can't handle capacity and it costs more.
You know, I have a feeling we're going to see AT&T doing more of the free Wi-Fi deals, specifically to account for all of that data overload that they can't handle.
Yeah, let's not forget that AT&T provides all of the Wi-Fi for Starbucks stores.
Right.
Yeah. So they probably
made
that.
And they do Barnes & Noble.
Yep, yep.
And yeah, are they doing Borders also? I can't remember.
I don't know about Borders. They do McDonald's.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I mean that's pretty cool, cuz you know when I was traveling, you know, on the road, we stopped in McDonald's and I had Wi-Fi, you know, AT&T Wi-Fi, boom. Just right there, you know, in the middle of Central California. So I mean, that's a nice feature with the iPhone and the other carriers, but like even overseas, I mean, we think our data plans and caps are bad. You start looking at the UK and other places like that. I mean, they're capped at a gigabyte or 500 megabytes, something like that. It's just like crazy.
You know, people do complain about the data caps that AT&T has, but I agree. If you look at other places, the data caps we have aren't that bad. Right. When I went to Italy and put on the international writer package so that I could still use my iPhone, I can't remember what it was, but it gave me 20 megabytes for the month. And I kept data turned off almost the whole time so that I wouldn't go over, because it's really expensive. Like, I mean, it's goatsy images end up in your head. That's how bad it is. And it was bad. And I still went over.
Yeah, luckily, I think Apple's dealing with that with the iPhone launch, because the big deal that was made today was that UK, I think Canada and France, all the devices sold through Apple are completely unlocked. And now in most of those countries, I think Apple has four or five carriers in every one of those countries, So your choice, if you can get an unlocked, I mean, it almost makes sense over there. It seems like to just get an unlocked device and then bounce from carrier to carrier, whoever's going to give you the best deal. And you would hope there'd start to be some competition because you can take your device wherever you want.
Yeah, well, and it also makes sense because if you're someone that's actually traveling around the EU,
right,
you can go to another country, buy a SIM card, you know, with prepaid minutes or whatever on it, pop it in your iPhone and keep going.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a really popular option, even though it's much more expensive. I mean, you have to pay the full boat price, but anybody who travels a lot in Europe or has to deal with that, you know, compared to paying the international data plan, you know, go over to the UK and buy an unlocked phone. Although, unfortunately, it's not supported in the US, which is just infuriating.
Yeah. I'm shaking my head because, once again, I forgot this is not a video podcast.
All right. I think it's
change that.
Probably time to wrap it up. We're going to do our iPhone picks, though. And Adam, since you haven't been here for a while, how about you go first?
I have to have one of those. That's right. You even reminded me.
Do you have one? We can let Jeff go first.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I was wondering if I could actually pick a piece of content within an app that's already been picked.
Of course you can. Sure.
So maybe that's only a half pick. Maybe I'll have to come back. You come back to me maybe later if this isn't good enough.
Okay, we'll let you know.
You know, I am still thrilled with the ABC Player app on the iPad. I think Jeff, you picked it, right, originally?
Probably.
Or did we just mention it in passing? Anyway, it's you know, compared to something like Netflix, which I also love, but from a UI perspective, it's just an awesome application. But I was totally excited because I completely missed with my vacations and having relatives visit and stuff like that. I completely missed the sort of season premiere, the two-part premiere of Wipeout, which is like my guilty pleasure TV show now. You guys ever watch Wipeout?
No, what's that?
I haven't seen it either.
Oh, is that that stupid...
It's the stupidest thing ever. But basically, they put these people through the most impossible obstacle course ever.
And oh, it's like Tekashi's Castle, but
beat themselves up. Yeah, I think so. It's the American version of some old Japanese TV game show. But it just cracks me up. It's just like when I just need to decompress and not think about anything, it's like the perfect show for that. So if you haven't seen it, it's on the ABC app, streaming for free. It looks great, plays great on the iPad.
So Adam,
really, really cool.
Since you enjoy that, have you seen Most Extreme Elimination Challenge?
No, but I've heard
of it. Oh my God, you have to see that. Because it was on Spike TV. And I think you can actually get it on DVD, which means it's probably on Netflix streaming.
Right.
And it's Tekashi's Castle. But what they did was they dubbed it in English and just changed the people's names to like the color guys are Vic Romano and Kenny Blankenship. And they change the game names to the most ridiculous things and make up these weird rules for them and then just do all this voiceover stuff that goes along with it. And it is so incredibly funny. And Wipeout, I believe what the premise of that show is that they thought, well, let's take what they did with Most Extreme Elimination Challenge, but actually do it instead of taking an old show and doing voiceovers.
Right, right. And I'm convinced the key to the Wipeout show, though, is in the casting. Whoever they have, you know, sort of screening the contestants is brilliant because you get these people that are just so into it, but for the most part, athletically uncoordinated.
Yeah.
Oh, that's critical.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, for a show like that to work, they have to be horribly uncoordinated and out of shape. And slightly inebriated, even better.
It's just... Yeah, if you just want to watch people make complete fools of themselves for a half an hour or an hour, it's awesome.
Okay, so here's a couple other characters from MXC that hopefully will draw you in. So the guy in the field that's interviewing people afterwards, Guy LaDouche, and the guy that starts everyone off for each one of their challenges, Captain Tennille. So just go and watch.
Now, you know, I remember my other pick. This is the one I was going to pick, and it's almost along the same lines. No one here has picked Puppet Pals, right?
No.
Have you tried Puppet Pals?
I haven't. What's that about?
It's available for free. You get some characters, but it's essentially like you can create somewhere between like a South Park style and a Jib Jab style animation on your iPad or iPhone. So they give you some backgrounds and they give you some characters. I think the default set they give you is like a Western scene, and it has a timeline and an editor, and basically you just drag these what amount to like paper doll kind of cutouts around, and then you can record voiceover and you can set up scenes and transitions and things like that, and then save these little goofy puppet shows that you can make. And then it has in-app purchase if you want to purchase additional characters. I think they have like famous people, they have a politician's set, and you can share them out. You can share out your little creations on I think Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that, if I'm remembering right. And I'm not seeing the sharing. I don't know if you can share them or not, but you can certainly play them back on your iPad, and it's kind of hilarious.
Cool, and it's free. It's called Puppet Pals.
Puppet Pals. And it's kind of a neatly done little app. It's kind of hard sometimes to do some of the movements, because you have to do it all in real time, so you can do like scaling and dragging. But it ends up being pretty actually funny. It adds to the humor how kind of crude the animation is, you know, sort of like South Park or a Jib Jab or something.
Cool. All right, Jeff, it is your turn.
Oh, sorry. I was making videos with Adam's pick. Yeah, I went and downloaded it while you're talking about it. I just made a dude jump on a horse's head.
It's pretty easy to do, and it's kind of funny. And when you add the voiceover, you know, when you start doing voices, it gets pretty hilarious.
That is so awesome. All right. So I can't remember what I picked last week. Was Reader for the iPad out yet?
No, but that's my pick.
All right. Well, I'll let you have that. I'll pick a different app.
Thank you. Because I'm really excited
really
about
like
it.
You.
You do. Thank you.
Okay. How about Google Earth for the iPad? That just came out.
That's a wonderful pick.
It is. And it's Google Earth. And it now has an iPad interface. And I actually think it works better on my iPad than it does on my Mac.
Really?
Yes. And now keep in mind that my Mac is the MacBook Pro. It was the last model before they switched to the unibody construction. So the fact that I can actually podcast in and of itself is stunning.
That's not too old. But
with the way I handle applications, yeah, it's a wonder it doesn't just melt every day. So, but anyhow, Google Earth, it does everything that you'd expect. The one thing that tripped me up at first was when I clicked tapped the little, find me button at the top center in the bar, and it zoomed in on where I was. I tested this while I was sitting at Starbucks, and I swear the dot had to be where my chair was in Starbucks. Which that kind of threw me a little bit, like, holy crap, how what does Google know? But then I thought, okay, show me some other place. Since I picked another city, it was like Venice or something in Italy, and said, take me there. So it zooms out, and it gets all the way out to the east coast of the United States, and then zooms all the way back right to the place I'm sitting. And I couldn't get it to go to Venice. So what I figured out was, if you've tapped the little Find Me thing, it turns blue. And as long as it's blue, no matter what you do or where you go, the blue dot showing where you are will stay exactly where you are. You have to tap it again to release your location, and then you can search for other places and go.
That sounds like bad UI design to me.
Oh, it's horrible UI design. But, you know, it's Google. It's not about UI design. It's about Google.
Because like, Google's known for its impressive UI interface.
Right, exactly.
It's no wonder I drink.
Yeah. Does this come with the building view? So if you go to a place where the buildings are filled in, can you zoom down and check that out? Because I wasn't able to see that.
Well, I'm looking right now. Hold on. I'm letting it find me. Yes, use my location. Just
it says places, businesses, panorama photos.
I know it does. It has like the road overlay.
Right, which, and terrain.
Yeah.
But I don't think it has the buildings yet, which is okay. That's just one of my favorite features. It's still Google Earth on your iPad, and it works really well. It has the you can change your perspective and look.
Yeah, it doesn't have. Yeah, it doesn't have the building thing. Funny thing is, right now, it's showing me in my neighbor's place. So
that's because you're on his Wi-Fi.
I better be on my Wi-Fi. I mean, I'm
joking.
Crap. No, I'm at the TMO Central Towers right now, and the button is showing me in the building next door.
Huh. Interesting. Huh. Well, it's are you on the you're on the iPad with Wi-Fi, no 3G, right?
Right.
Yeah. It's I actually found that
Skyhook knows where the base station is that I'm using
because you entered it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So your pick is Google Earth for iPad. It is free and it's awesome. So go get it. Now my pick is Reader for the iPad. And I'm so happy this application came out. I've been waiting ever since I got my iPad. I've been waiting for a wonderful, easy to use, useful, mostly useful. I couldn't find even a useful RSS reader for my iPad, and Reader just fits the bill so nicely. It's very elegant, and it has its own little UI twists that make it very cool. If you're not sure how to spell it, it's R-E-E-D-E-R, Reader, like feeder or feed, but Reader. The interface is slightly difficult to figure out at first, because if you haven't used Reader on the iPhone, there are three buttons that you can click on the sidebar. There's a little star, a little dot, and some lines. And it took me several minutes to figure out that the star shows you all of your starred articles. The dot shows you all of your unread articles, and then the lines show you everything that's cached within the application. So what it does is it syncs with your Google Reader account. So you have to have Google Reader. There's no way to add feeds into the app right now. I'm really hoping they're going to add management to that. Jeff, do you use Reader on your iPhone?
I use Reader on my iPhone, and I'm using it on my iPad, of course, now too.
Is there a way to manage feeds on the iPhone, or is it strictly just reading?
I have never tried to manage from my mobile devices. I actually do all of my management from within NetNewsWire on my Mac.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing so far. So you have to have a Google Reader account, and then you have to get everything set up. But if you already have a Google Reader account, just plug it in and go. So what happens if you go to the dot where it shows, here are your unread feeds? If you have folders, it will give you first, it'll give you just everything that you have subscribed to. It'll give you one little square. So the layout's kind of stack based. So you have one square where it says, here are your unread articles. You can tap that and then just get a list of chronological articles from every source, every folder that you have. There are also, if you do have folders, those are broken down for you and listed. And if you have some stuff that's not in a folder, that is also represented by a square. So if you have a folder with multiple feeds in there, you can tap on it, and then you get a list chronological of all of the stories from the feeds within that list. But if you want to pull, this is one of my favorite things about this, if you want to pull stories from just one source within a folder, all you do is you pinch open on that stack like you do in the Photos application, and then it pops open and shows you each individual feed from that folder, and you can tap on it and then just get that specific feed. And it's just really cool to do the pinch and stuff. Now, there are other gestures, such as if you're reading a story and you want to check back with the list of stories, you don't want to move per se, you just want to check the list. You can swipe from left to right and just kind of push the story aside and check out the list, or you can just swipe to bring it back and look at it that way. It also has a neat little swipe left or right to mark as read or unread, which is very handy. One of my favorite features about this is with places such as Macworld, for example, they give you like two sentences maybe on anything in the feeds. And so you, in order to read everything, you have to tap on the full article and load up the entire Macworld page. And it's just a big pain, especially on this. So what this also allows you to do is there are many ways of viewing something from Reader. There's Instapaper integration. There's Twitter. You can open it up in Safari. You can copy the link. You can mail a link to the article. You can mail the entire article just through email, and it also has Instapaper and Google Mobilizer built in, and you can actually within the settings set it to, if you simply tap on the headline after you've opened the little feed snippet that you have, you can tap on the headline and then it just brings it up in, you know, Instapaper Mobilizer or the Google Mobilizer. And so that's how I have it set up. When I tap on the headline, it goes right to Instapaper with all of my settings that are saved already. So it saves the you know, text size and the margins and all that stuff. So it's just, it's very, very, very nice. And there are actually a bunch of other features that are built into this thing, such as if you go to landscape, it'll show you on the left, it'll show you a list of the articles, and on the right, it shows you whatever article you've selected, just like the mail application. Or you can read it in portrait mode, and it works very well that way too. And it's just, I love this application. It's just very nice. There are a few things that really bug me about it, such as the inability to, like I said before, to manage feeds. You can't move anything around. You can't move stuff in and out of folders. You can't subscribe to something new yet. I'm not sure if there are plans to add that. As well, there's also a weird thing where you can't pull stories that are further down in the feeds. It doesn't really. So if you're subscribed to something and the articles are more than, I don't know, a week old or whatever the settings call for, it won't allow you to download stories, you know, that are still in the RSS feed, as far as I've been able to tell. Jeff, have you messed with that at all?
You know, with the way that I'm clearing out articles as I'm going through, I haven't tried that yet, so I'm not sure.
Okay.
But it wouldn't surprise me if you're right.
Yeah, for the most part, it's just phenomenal. I love this thing. There are definite improvements that they need to make, but personally, I feel like this is the RSS reader that's out for the iPad right now.
You know, this is actually my most favoritest way to view my RSS feeds on any platform.
Is Reader.
Mm. Yeah, Reader on my iPad.
It just feels good, right? It's so nice.
Yeah, it's so much easier to use. I mean, NetNewsWire on my Mac is fine, but it's one of those things where I'm going, yeah, it's a tool and it's fine. And it does what I need it to do. But then I sit down with Reader on my iPad and I'm going, okay, this is how I want to deal with news.
Right.
Have you guys used, I've been using ever since, because there wasn't something on the iPad that I found that I really liked and I didn't want to invest, because I was unhappy with kind of NetNewsWire on the iPhone. I didn't want to invest in it on the iPad again and pay $10.
Right.
I ended up with NewsRack.
That's what I was using.
Somewhat similar to Reader. So I'm curious, what's the thing that would, the kind of one feature that you would say, oh, this is why I switched from NewsRack?
It has to be the
whole interface.
The interface, the UI. It's just wonderful to use.
That's what that's what it seemed like to me, because the functionality seems very similar in terms of starring articles and how you manage things, and you know, NewsRack does address some of those other things that I think you guys were mentioning.
The one other thing that I had an issue with, Jeff, I don't know if you did. You have an issue with scrolling with your thumb and accidentally knocking the page left right instead of up down.
No, but that's because I tend to kind of cup my hand above my iPad, and so I do all the scrolling work with my fingertips, like with my index finger. So my thumb rarely touches my iPad screen.
Yeah, I think there's a slight issue with how they're detecting whether you're going right, left, or up, down in the application, and I'm going to let them know that if they don't already know it. But aside from that, I mean, these are just very slight irritations. It's just a fantastic experience.
Yeah.
And it's $5.
The one feature that's missing from any RSS reader, and I don't even know if it's technically possible, but you would think it wouldn't be that hard. I would really like somebody to figure out a way for me to kind of create on the fly my own archive RSS feed. I kind of use Instapaper in this way now. I mean, Instapaper.
Oh, yeah, because you're from the old NewsGator days.
Yeah.
Which, and when I say that, I'm from that world too.
Where I can throw specific articles from different feeds into a folder that gets synced to all my devices. And I can create multiple folders and subfolders and kind of categorize out specific articles that I want to come back to.
That would be cool. Someone should add that into their app somewhere along the way. I mean, I'm using Instapaper to kind of address that.
Yeah, that's exactly my solution too, yeah.
I'm guessing you can use the fave thing, the star thing.
Yeah, but then they all just go in one big bucket. I want to be able to categorize them like, okay, these are iPhone stories that I want to look at later. These are Mac stories I want to look at later. These are just general tech stories, or these are opinion pieces, you know, so more categorized. So when I'm coming back to a feed, I don't have to kind of dig through and find, because I've already looked through them, and it's nice to be able to categorize them on the fly. And it's a real specific usage. So most people probably don't read RSS feeds like I do, because I'm using them in a lot of ways for research.
You know what would address that issue, even if it wasn't added into one of these applications specifically, would be to add an Instapaper tagging feature that, instead of just throwing it into your unread in Instapaper, lets you choose which Instapaper folder you throw things in.
Well, you can do that with
very much like labels in Gmail.
Yeah, you can have a bookmarklet for specific Instapaper folders, but I think you're looking for something that's actually built into an app.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think it's coming. I think just nobody's kind of figured it out quite yet.
Yeah. But yeah, that's my pick. Reader, R-E-E-D-E-R. It's $5. Totally worth it.
Money.
Love it. It is.
Oh, it's
totally
worth the $5.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and anyone that complains saying, look, I already bought Reader for my iPhone, I don't want to have to pay for it again for my iPad. Okay, first keep in mind that developers have to eat too. And when a developer creates a program as good as this, they deserve to be rewarded for the effort that they put into the program. It's worth $5. Just go buy it.
Yeah, that, and it is, you know, when they write an iPad application, it's a different app.
It better be. I mean, if it's just the same app with different buttons, all right, well, then the developer needs to go back and rethink how they're developing this application, because the iPad screen is designed so that you can have different types of interfaces. So you should.
Yep.
Yep. Read.
Okay. So with that, you can check out, go to assist.com/Ally for a free 30-day trial for GoToAssist Express. And I encourage everybody to check that out, because it lets the sponsors know that you are hearing the ad and possibly interested in trying it out. So if you are interested in trying it out, go to assist.com/Ally. And you can get the iPhone picks that we talk about, as well as show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. And you can send your feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. You can send text or audio. If you send audio, we may or may not play it on the show, your audio comments. And they can also be phoned in using our special We Have Communicators hotline, 202-642-6667. And,
you know, and if you don't have anything that you can think to say on that phone number, do what I did. Call, say four random words, and then say bye.
Mm-hmm. And see if the translation works. Even better, more words if you want to. Is it four or you just kinda...
I always do four words and then say bye.
Oh, okay.
Even better if it's four letter words.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Now we're going to get it. All right. Adam Christensen can be found at the Mattcast, mattcast.com, and twitter.com/mattcast. And you have a premium show, right?
Yes. Yeah. Three times a week, I put out extra shows for Mattcast members, and you can get information and details on that program by going to member.mattcast.com.
Member.mattcast.com. And you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, as well as twitter.com/jgamet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Oh, sure. And once again, it's been like Mr. Toad's wild ride.
Okay. Now, do you have any other projects that you're working on that you'd like to pimp, or is that it?
Oh, you know, actually, and believe it or not, everyone, this was not rehearsed.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah, I'm teaching a podcasting class at Boulder Digital Arts, and that's coming up in a couple weeks. Hold on, I'll look up the date. June 28th, I believe. June 28th. So, so if you're interested in learning more about podcasting and you're going to be somewhere in the Front Range area, BoulderDigitalArts.com, sign up, and I'll see you there.
Cool.
Hey, you know what, Jeff, too? We probably should mention it's a bit early, but people can go check it out. You're going to be at MCE again, right?
That's right. We're on the panel together.
Yes. We're going to be speaking at the Macintosh Computer Expo in Petaluma in October.
Right.
If you go to, it's North County Mug, ncmug.org/Mac Computer Expo. You can get details. It's the October 2nd from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Right.
So if you're in the Bay Area, you might want to pop over. It's really nice over there.
It is. It's a really cool event. And the panel, it's you and me, and Victor's on it also, right?
Yes.
And Brian Chaffin.
And Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
That sounds like an all-star panel. That sounds like a panel I wish I was on.
Absolutely. Well, and then just going, I mean, there's other speakers beyond ours. You got Derek Story and Lisa Snyder and Paul Kent and Kurt Schumacher. I mean, it goes on and on. There's tons of great people there.
ncmug.org.
ncmug.org/Mac Computer Expo.
Yep. And my Twitter, if you want to follow me, twitter.com/MichaelJohnston is not where I talk about the iPhone usually, but occasionally I'll get excited about an RSS reader and tweet about that. And that's it. We'll see you next time on We Have Communicators. Bye.
An iPod.
Hey.
A phone.
Yeah.
Dude, lame. This thing tells me that it's going to be $700 for an iPhone 4 Black.
Oh, when you that's what it cost me too. When you put the reservation in,
yeah,
you get a confirmation email. Even though you tell them that you're doing an upgrade, and they ask you to plug in your existing contract eligibility information. I think because it can't,
they probably just skip the whole.
It can't connect to AT&T servers. Yeah, it just times out and then goes, okay, well, I'll take the reservation anyway, but I don't know what your existing plan is or what your upgrade eligibility is.
So worst case scenario,
defaults back. Yeah,
yeah.
But at least you have the reservation in. Hopefully.
Yeah, I don't know.
See, my reservation is showing the correct price.
Then you must have actually had a slim sliver of time when it actually connected to AT&T servers.
That's
and, like,
all
transmitted that info back to Apple.
Okay,
I did mine from the Apple Store application.
Me too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Me too. And it had me plug in all my information, and for a long time, it would just crash when it was timing out.
Mm-hmm. We should probably save this for the show because this is That's what
you're not
this
recording.
Is. I'm recording. I was recording 2 minutes before I called any of you, but I'm not going to edit this.
So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Fingers.